Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we're excited to have Lee Carraher with us on the show. Lee is an acclaimed author and speaker, as well as a recognized expert on creating high-performing, positive, intergenerational workplaces. Through her work, she shows companies how to embrace the qualities of different generations and how to organize the significant benefits of shifting the definition of company loyalty from a long tenure of employment to a lifetime of allegiance, regardless of employment status. Lee is also active in her community and sits on the board of directors, as well as the board of the trustees for KQED Public Media, San Francisco's Grace Cathedral, and Menlo College. Her latest book, which we're excited to talk about today, is called The Boomerang Principle: Inspire Lifetime Loyalty from Your Employees. Thanks so much for joining us today, Lee.
Jennifer, it's so great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, this is such a great topic. You should have seen what I had on social media going. People already started having this debate just when I told them about the show. Well, what does that mean? And what is intergenerational? So tell our listeners a little bit how you came to get to this point and to study this subject.
Sure. So I run a public relations digital marketing firm based in San Francisco and New York, and we have about 35 people in three different generations, boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. And we did not do such a great job of it a few years ago, so I set out to figure it out, and we did. And I wrote this book and my previous book to share with people sort of, you know, just the things that we learned the hard way. It really helped people work together across generations, which is going to be the norm. It is the norm today and will continue for the foreseeable future.
I completely agree with you. On the recruitment side of things, I find myself often speaking with both employers and employees about the discontent in the workplace because Joe or Jim or Susie or John doesn't do work the same way Bobby or Jenny or whoever might do the work. And so how did you learn to, you know, basically narrow the gaps or to connect the dots there?
Well, you know, that's so funny because the first time it really just made me angry was when I asked for someone to send me a draft of something, and I was expecting them to either put a piece of paper on my desk or to send me a Word attachment, right? And instead I get this email that has a Google link and it says, okay, here's the draft, Lee. Let me know, you know, love and kisses, whatever. And I go to the Google, I'm like, what the heck is this? I go to the Google link. There's the doc, the Google Doc. It's got like nine colors in there, all these comments on the left-hand side. And I'm like, this is not a draft. Oh, my gosh. It's such a visual reaction. And it really hit me over the head that, you know, there are an entire generation of people who are starting work who have never used the tools that I use in my business. So when we looked at it and I started interviewing lots of people because of that. I'm like, what are the things that are that make you angry? What are the things that you are so frustrated with from all sides? And really, one is technology. You know, sometimes people are starting their careers and their work, they're being trained backwards in technology. Two is expectations. They're, you know, the older people in the offices, the Gen Xers and boomers. Well, I'm a boomer. I'm the last year boomer. You know, they have this opinion, it may be false, that they, you know, they just knew what to do when they were 25. Of course they didn't, but they forgot, right? And there's a lot of, well, don't they know they should show up 5 minutes early and they should know not to wear the pajamas to work and they should know, blah, 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 all the should stuff. And I think some of the should stuff, yeah, we learned that before. That was just part of the culture. And today we don't have a lot of that those things built into our culture, like cotillion and etiquette lessons and reading, you know, things that, you know, how to do this and how to use a napkin. So there definitely is a lack of education that's happening around etiquette in school. And it's really dropped off the education thing across the board, across the country. even in home ec, right? Things that you used to learn in home ec, that doesn't work anymore. So we just looked at deciding, okay, what are the behaviors we expect from people and telling them really early on, like the first week, so that there was no gap in understanding what we expected from people. And a lot of the time, it was like, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know I had to be here by 8:30. Like, it says right here, be here by 8:30. Or, you know, I didn't know that I had to use my napkin at my dinner. I've never done that before. And it's not a bad thing. It's not, it's just an is thing, right? It's not ignorant. It's uninformed. And so part of the half the battle is informing, and half the battle is setting an expectation really early. And then the next thing is to say, you know, this is how we do things. If you see a better way of doing things, please do it our way first. And then once you understand our way, then you can, I would be very happy to hear how you can make it better with new technologies, new processes, new whatever. Because it's very clear to me that younger people have an advantage of being digitally native, that we can learn every day. So now we use a lot of Google Docs, and I accept the Google link as a draft.
Yeah, I look back when I was a kid, and I was probably 22 when I entered the workplace, and I'll never forget, I was pulled into the president's office at least once a week. First, it was because my clothes were too short. Like, I vividly remember wearing mm-hmm. this fabulous outfit that I had picked up on Melrose with these, you know, bright pink top and short little mini skirt and like high heels. And the president is like, Jennifer, I know it's happy hour, but it does not mean that you're going clubbing or that you can wear a mini skirt.
Right.
And so then I like went the exact opposite direction. And about a month later, she said, you know, Jennifer, I appreciate the fact that you've removed your mini skirts from your wardrobe. And then the following week, she said, you know, this bohemian thing, though, isn't working. Because then I went to like the floor-length skirts and full-blown hippie. And nobody ever told me
right.
Not acceptable work attire.
Oh, my God. Well, and people are, you know, you had a good boss. I mean, people are nervous about telling people these things, like, oh, I'm going to get sued. And so they just let it go. They don't want to be judgmental. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to appear like they're being a fuddy-duddy or whatever. So they just let people be wrong for a long time. And that is just the worst thing you can possibly do, is let people go on and on and on. They wear their bohemian dress for 4 months, and then finally your boss can't take it anymore. And they say, well, this is bohemian dress, or why are you wearing your baseball hat backwards to work or whatever? And the person's been doing it for 4, 5, 6 months without any repercussion. And clearly this has pissed somebody off, and they've let them be wrong. And that's the first thing you can do to get someone out your door, is let that person be wrong for, you know, a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, and you're right. I was very lucky. It's just in the genre of you didn't know, you didn't know. If you don't know something,
right.
You know, I think that cell phone
you
usage falls.
It.
Yeah, cell phone usage falls in that same category. I remember the first millennial hired, and like every 2 seconds, you know, he was a really good employee in some ways, but about every 2 minutes to 5 minutes, he would be doing something on his cell phone, which, as you know, being an employer, drives an employer mad.
Right. Well, we actually don't allow cell phones into meetings anymore. Not because they're so distracted, right? And the other thing to say is, you know, if you're going to the workplace, if you put your cell phone on the table, you're telling somebody that the cell phone's more important than the person you're talking to. So if you take your cell phone into the office, you know, put it on, first of all, put it on vibrator or silent, and then put it somewhere you can't see it. Because if you're with somebody, the most important thing is to pay attention to them, not like wait for that extra call. Which I realize I'm talking to someone from LA and it's a whole different gig down there. However, truly, you'll get more done if your cell phone's not in your hand all the time.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate with you on something, because I attended a workshop a couple years ago, and I'm sure this is going to become more and more of an issue with kids nowadays not being taught writing, formal writing, I actually cannot read my own handwriting. So I'm the fastest texter typist in the world, and I can probably take 3 pages of notes per minute that you speak, but I can't take notes or even read my own handwriting if I go into a meeting and I'm trying to take it on paper. So how do you remedy that with the generational gaps?
So I would say for that, if you can take a tablet or a
computer,
a laptop with you instead of a phone, you're going to be able to, one, it'll be very clear that you're doing that. It's a much bigger screen and people can see that, right?
Yeah.
I think the problem with the phone is it's such a small device in comparison that the feeling is that people are doing their texting, they're doing, you know, Snapchat, they're looking at their Facebook feed. But if you can show people the big screen while you take notes, I think that allays a lot of fear that you're just not paying attention. Having said that, there's a lot of data that says people who write notes out actually recall them, you know, something like 60% more than people who use, you know, use their fingers to take notes. So maybe for the important things, figuring out like what that scrawl is. And I have the same problem. What did I say here?
trying to reread your handwriting.
Get proficient.
Yeah, that's interesting thought. Now, the funny thing that I've noticed that we're talking about thus far is a lot of the complaints perhaps that Gen Xers and baby boomers have about millennials. Was there the reverse that you came across where millennials had complaints about Gen Xers or baby boomers?
Absolutely. Well, I think some of the, you know, millennials in general, the complaints I hear a lot are they don't trust me. They want me to use like this, a pencil, you know? why do I have to be in the office? I can do my work wherever I want to do it. You know, I can do my work hanging upside down from a trapeze if I want. Oh, well, you know, I'm really good at that. And they don't believe I have potential. And, you know, this, I think one big challenge is that, you know, millennials have had more power in their hands most of their lives than went to the moon. And Gen Xers, and they're digitally native, and Gen Xers and boomers are not, right? And they've had the benefit of the technology is really two things. One is access to information, or at least the perception that I can get any information I want if I just go online and I use Google or Bing or whatever, right? Go down a rabbit hole on information. And the other thing is access to people. I can email anybody, I can tweet at anybody, I can follow anybody, that kind of stuff. And, you know, if in my hand I have the power to send JetBlue back to the gate because they held me on the, you know, the tarmac for 10 hours or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So their expectation of access to information and access to people, because they've had it their whole lives and they get to the workplace and they don't have that access anymore, really is probably the biggest piece of, like, why can't I know what's going on? Why can't I just walk into the CEO's office? I can tweet at him right here, you know? And so setting an expectation and showing, you know, here's the one, first of all, millennials probably know more about your business than you do, right?
Okay. Yeah.
They just do. They're, you know, they drill down, they're going on Glassdoor. They look at that. They look at everything before they make a decision to work for you. So one, being more transparent is absolutely helpful to the business. Absolutely. You know, you don't have to tell them to everybody everything. And there are things you obviously can't tell everybody, but in terms of talking about the status of the business and what we're doing, what we're not doing, the more you share, the more people can get on board. And then number two on the access to people is there's definitely like, why can't I go to that meeting? And making sure that people understand why. If you start with the why can't you do something, or when could you do something, and when can I take you to a meeting, at least people, then you're not shutting them off. You're giving them anybody, you know, the context that they need to really understand where they fit in the office. I think the third thing on that is really the most important, that role. What is my role here? What do I have to do to make that role excellent? And then having the employee, any whoever age it is, but particularly millennials, explain what do I want to do so that the other person can help you get there. And there is an expectation from millennials to people around them that the other people around them will help them get where they want to go. But they can't read your mind. So you really have to take it on your own. It's your responsibility, one, to not just do your job, but master your job. One and done does not do it. Master the job. And two, to be clear about what you want to do. And when you solicit someone's help on saying, okay, I'm here, I want to go there, setting out a plan of how to get from A to B so someone can help you. If you're expecting the company to do all that work for you, you are going to be really disappointed. It is not their job to make your career. It's your job to articulate your career.
So clearly there's separation between these different generations and how they approach work and whether it's cohesive or not cohesive. Are there any questions that you would recommend asking to somebody in an interview to be able to ascertain if it's going to be a place that has good synergy and cohesiveness intergenerationally, or if it's a place that's more discordant?
from, if you're an employee looking, you know, a prospective employee looking for a job, I think important questions to ask of the person who's interviewing you are those things. You know, what's the makeup of, what's the general makeup of the team? How diverse is this team? So people can talk about diversity from an age or a gender or a race or a, you know, wherever, ethno thing. So you understand how it fits, right? Number one. Number two, what is the mentoring situation? Because usually a good program that has good intergenerational mix has a really strong mentor program. That's not just, it's bi-directional mentoring. So I mentor you, you mentor me, the same kind of thing. So what's the mentoring program? And then three, so talk to me about, so this is this job. What is the traditional, you know, what should I expect from here? So imagine I do a great job at this and I've reached the top of this level. What could I expect to be different career paths from this job? And listen for the answers. If the company doesn't have good answers for those things, they haven't figured it out yet, right? If you're a company looking, you know, talking to a prospective employee, it really depends on, I think, where that person comes from. But I think asking, you know, what do you expect from this job? What do you expect your day to look like? What will your how would you, you know, if your team is 8 people on it, you're number 9, how do you think you'll become part of the team? So you can really unravel if this person is team oriented or not. And if they ask you questions about, well, who's on the team, you know, blah, blah, blah kind of stuff. So I think that those, you know, really digging down into how do people get along and how do people learn from each other is probably the thing I would focus on most to see if you're going to be a good fit or not.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a good way to approach it on both sides, because it is an obstacle that a lot of employers and employees are facing. Are there other obstacles that you see once you try to generate this cohesiveness and you begin the education process on, you know, all these different generational perspectives to integrate them? Are there any obstacles that you see when you're working on that when you're in an office?
Well, I think the first obstacle is just sort of setting a new way of working, a new understanding about, you know, we're not going to worry about who's in what generation. What we're going to do is make this the best place for everybody. And frankly, what's true, and at least the truth I have found in my own company and in all the research I've done, is that when you create a company where millennials can thrive, everybody else thrives. But the reverse is not necessarily true, right? So when you, and what that means is, you know, when you have a company that has a high appreciation culture, so I appreciate that you did a great job, or I appreciate that you got this done on time or got it even done early because that really made a difference in my day, or you just automatically share that please and thank you and appreciation. Appreciated teams outperform unappreciated teams by how they feel about it. Do they feel appreciated or not? By up to 30%, and that 30% drops right to the bottom line, right? That is an efficient company. An efficient company which drops 30% profit to the bottom line based on how people are feeling, right? Very touchy-feely, but, you know, we're humans, right? So the more people feel appreciated and understood, the better they work, the less waste there is in their day. So when you can do this appreciation across whoever's in the team, and to have that become a standard, I would say if you did nothing else but just did that, you would be so far ahead of everybody else. And that is often a challenge for boomers and Xers, not a challenge for millennials, because they didn't have that. Like it used to be, you know, Mad Men, your thank you is your paycheck. You know,
yeah, totally.
There's the door, right?
I was thinking that. I was thinking the boomers and Gen Xers that I know.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way anymore, you know? Well, if people are grinding on the fact that you didn't appreciate the fact that I stayed an extra 55 minutes or whatever, they're going to carry that grind into the next day. And it's just going to eat away at proficiency. And when you get along better, when you have a more positive culture, you have so much more potential for a positive business on all definitions of the word.
So is that what you talk about when you're speaking about the boomerang principle, about inspiring a lifetime of loyalty from your employees? Is that one of the parts of the boomerang principle, is that
one of the
acknowledgement?
Absolutely. So the boomerang principle is that those companies that encourage and allow their former employees to return to them have a strategic advantage over those that don't. So if you bring people back after they've left you, and if you're open to that, you are creating something that people want to return to, you have a strategic advantage. And why would you want to return, right? So you have exhausted your opportunity. Perhaps you exhaust your opportunity at the company, at the Acme company at this point in your career. And there's nowhere, you know, you can't go up. You don't want to go across. You really want to do something different. I want to try something new. I've been here for 7 years. I want to go somewhere else. You go somewhere else. You go do your thing. And then later on in your career, you're like, you know what? I want something different now, or I've tapped out here, or this is not what I wanted. I'd like to return. Why would you want to do that? One, because you felt appreciated. Two, because you felt you had opportunity and that you were fairly treated. Three, that you liked the people. And four, that you liked the work. And if you can focus on those things when people are still with you, first of all, they leave you much less quickly than traditional, what happens today, particularly around millennials and who don't think they're going to stay in a job more than 3 or 4 years. If you focus on creating a place for them to come back to, they don't leave as quickly. And when they do come back, those employees are so much more productive, so much faster. And in today's fast-moving workplace, you know, anytime you can cut down onboarding, the cost of onboarding, you are winning. And I'm not saying that everyone needs to come back all the time, but if you, at least you're open to it and people would want to come back, you are creating a better culture and a better business today.
Yeah, I can see that's being true. And so what would you say to encourage employees who might be leaving and they might not even see it on their potential horizon that they would return? How can you always be certain as the employee leaving a company that you leave that door open and not close it behind you?
Yeah. So this, you are in total control of whether or not you're boomerang eligible or not, right? You're in total control, right? Your company right now may not accept boomerangs, but in the future might, right? And what you don't want to do is have something in your file that says bad last day or bad exit or something, right?
Right.
So you're in total control here. And so maybe you have a bad egg boss, or maybe you're like, ugh, I'm just done. But my first rule is don't be stupid. Just don't be stupid. Like, don't steal anything. Don't take a jump drive with all the company's information. Don't put the salt in the sugar shaker. Don't put a whoopee cushion. Whatever. Just don't be stupid, right? Don't wear an offensive T-shirt your last day at work. Just don't be stupid. That's number one. Number two is, you know, when you give your notice, it shouldn't be a total surprise, right? It shouldn't be a total surprise to your boss that you're interested in something else. And particularly if you like where you've worked, you know, have you explored with them other opportunities in the company? But when you do give your notice and have in your back pocket, you know, a memo, if you can write a memo with all the projects you're working on, because hopefully you've given at least a 2-week notice, but they might not take it, right? They might say, here's the door. Don't be offended by that. Really, do not be offended by that. But absolutely be prepared to say, here's all my projects. Here's what I'm working on. Here are the due dates. Here's how you should get it done if I'm not here. Here's who works for me. Here's when their reviews are. Here's how they're doing. Here's what I suggest. And, you know, if you're going to hire for a new job, I would rejigger the job description to add these responsibilities of the work I do every day that is not on my job description. You know, tie it up in a bow so that the team behind you isn't left holding an empty bag, right?
Right.
And that goes a long way in creating goodwill. And it's a lot of it is about goodwill, right?
Yeah.
If they do walk you out the door, don't be offended, particularly for salespeople. You know, don't be offended. But if you get them ready for your departure, you're winning. You are totally winning. And then lastly, after you've gone, you know, keep in touch with people. So if they're bitter that you left, and a lot of companies are bitter when people leave, which I think is ridiculous because every time you hire somebody, you know they're going to leave you. But that's another topic. Anyway, they're very bitter. As how you hold yourself, how you keep connected to people, how you are on LinkedIn, how if you're out in the world and you see a guy, Joe, I know you're looking for a new job. You should go back to my, you know, I'm going to introduce you to Sally. Sally's at Acme, my old company. I think you'd be a great fit. Like if you see something, a person out there in the world, an opportunity out there in the world, bring it to your former company if it makes sense. And these are the kinds of things that you can do to make sure that you're boomerang eligible if you want to be later in life.
Yeah, I think those are great pieces of advice, whether you want to be boomerang eligible or not, but just to remain
just to remain
in good standing with the company, because I see so many people on the recruitment side of things who burn their bridges and they can't figure out why they can't be hired. And it's because the last three jobs they were in won't give them a recommendation, or somebody, God forbid, not that this happens, but hypothetically might backdoor or knows somebody and they overhear something negative about you or how you exited the company. And it can really reflect poorly upon you long term on your career, not just in one situation.
Absolutely. And it's not just the company you leave people, right? And if someone had to pick up, you know, if you were lazy on the, and, you know, I guess the last thing I'd say is like, the last 2 weeks you're there, show up every day, do your job, you know, do your job, just do it. Because you're leaving a team behind. It's not just the company, the entity you leave behind. You leave your teammates behind who have to accommodate the fact that you're not going to be there anymore. And it's not, you know, so yeah, there might be something in your file that says negative things about your leaving, but it's the people you have to worry about most.
Yeah, and whether
you know,
they
I
go
think
somewhere
every time
else.
Someone leaves a every time someone leaves a company, that person can help or hurt the company. At the same time, every time you leave a team, everyone on that team can help you or hurt you for the rest of your career.
It's so true, because I've had it even happen where a person walks in for an interview and Joe Blow recognizes them in the lobby. And then next thing you know, they're whispering in HR's ear that, oh, my gosh, that person is awful. And it could just be one negative thing that they said, whether it was on their way out or in their tenure at that position.
Exactly. So in music, musicians now have blind auditions, right? They do an audition. They play their instrument behind a screen so that the people who are hearing it can't see who they are. And this is really how, and then you take the screen away and you're like, oh, that's that guy.
Really?
Right? So you don't want to even, you know, the thing about LinkedIn is nothing's blind anymore, right? And on skill stuff, you can't, you know, it's not just about how great you are at, proficient you are at your skill. It's about how you get along with everybody else too. Not that everyone doesn't have bad days, because we all do. But in context, you know, those last 2 weeks of your job, don't let those be your worst days at the company.
Yeah, go out on top. And I know another thing you're a big proponent of is creating a valuable alumni program. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing every company, no matter what size, should put in place is a company-run alumni program. And I don't mean, you know, you can go on LinkedIn and find hundreds of thousands of these, I think, you know, that are sort of run by rogue former employees, right? I'm talking about a company-run alumni program that keeps track of everybody who ever worked for you and keeps them informed of everything that's going on at the company. The easiest way to do this is to set up a private Facebook group that, you know, you can lock down and only have people who used to be at the company involved in. And in this place, you know, you're sharing information about the company. Perhaps when you have big announcements, you're allowing them to have early access to products. When you have a job posting, you put it there first, and you might give them the same bonus you would give an employee if they bring somebody to you. But this way, you keep them informed about where you were, and if you have things that you can share, like products, like coupons or early access or training. Any way you can be part of that person's career long-term is going to benefit you in the long-term. If you think about your company as like an institution, like a university does, those universities that have great alumni programs are the ones that have the easiest time keeping their matriculation high and the easiest time raising money. And for companies, we're not asking for money. We just want you to know what we're doing. And if you're out there in the world, think about us. Oh, yeah, Joe would like that job. Or, oh, my gosh. I think, you know, Acme Bread would be an awesome partner for so-and-so. But if you don't have them, if it's not in your, you know, if it's not in your top of mind, if it's not part of your regular, and I don't mean every single day, right? But if you don't see them sort of once a month, you know, they sort of go out of your purview and you forget. So it's your job as a company to keep your former employees up to speed and in a group. And my experience on this is that, you know, employees who are in alumni groups very much value them. Oh my goodness. They very much value them. They value the connection. They value the fact that the company wants to keep track of them and, you know, stay in relationship with them. And it can be definitely a mutual thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I had never heard of it as a concept before, but I can really see where it would add value on both parts, because you're keeping your connections alive from the employee standpoint, and from the employer standpoint, it could be a win-win, because people often have like-minded friends, and it would be great to create some sort of referral bonus within that alumni program, like you had mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some companies that are, you know, the companies who are the gold standard of this are really the big consulting firms like McKinsey and Bain and Deloitte. And that's how they create their whole value chain, right? They, someone goes to work for them, they get them a job at one of their clients, and then the client hires them back, right? But that's not how they get measured. They get measured on how rich that relationship is between the former employee and the entity. And if we focus on that, that's what I'm talking about from a lifetime. A lifetime loyalty is lifetime allegiance. It requires lifetime connection, and it shouldn't be on the employee's side. It needs to be on the company's side to say, you're invited to be in relationship with us for your whole career.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, which I know ties into all of this, is talk to me about why companies must embrace themselves as talent brands.
Yeah. So a talent brand is a brand where great people work, right? And people with great personal brands work. So today we talk about companies being great employer brands. So are you a top employer? Are you one of the top five places to work in a different category, in a different place around the country? When we think about the talent at the top 25% of talent, we're all looking for that top 25% talent. And those people with the top 25% talent, those 25% performers can really go anywhere they want, right? Anywhere they want. So really, the more you can attract them, the more it's not about, you know, marshmallows in the lunchroom. Those people are usually not motivated by a foosball table. Those people are motivated by is it a great team? Is it a great vision? Is this company doing something I really believe in? I have a cool role here? Am I learning something? So it's much more about the environment of the person, of the cultural and the career environment than it is about, you know, do I have foosball and can I take a nap? So those are great employer brands. Great talent brands are, you know, do I attract the best talent? And this is relatively new. This is a new concept that's just starting to take hold. But I think as we see, you know, in the gig economy, people becoming more contractors and less, and how do you keep great people out of contracting land? You keep great people as employees because you're a talent brand that knows how to attract great people.
Yeah, that's a new concept. I hadn't heard it before I had come across your press release when your PR person sent it. And I like that idea of talent begets more talent. And if you become known as a hotspot for talent, then you become a more valuable brand as an employer. And like you said, it does help. If you're an employee and you go to a company with a great brand, it's going to be all the easier to find your next job versus go to a company with an awful brand that nobody likes, nobody wants to work at, then it's only going to hurt your career down the road. And people will be like, "Oof, you worked at that company?" Bad judgment, perhaps.
Well, there are a couple of companies right now around the world that have, you know, really terrible reputation. The cost of a bad reputation is really expensive. It's really high. Uber, for example, is just getting, has had a really tough year, right? And a former employer of mine came and talked to me and said, I got a job from Uber and a job from another company. And I said to him, okay, you have to explain to me why you would go to that company. And he did. And I said, okay, that's good. You can go there. Yeah, my blessing. But some people have visceral reactions to, like, why would you go to Pepsi? You're a Coke drinker. Or why would you work at Burger King? Because they like McDonald's, whatever it is, right? Why would you go to Uber? They're terrible. Or why would you go do this? Because, you know, they have a terrible product. Where you choose to work today, because we can find out so much about those companies, really says a lot about you. And if you have choice, which, that's what we're all looking for. We're all looking for choice in our careers where we don't feel like we're stuck and we don't feel like we have to do this, right? when you are able to have choice in your career, those are the people who are in most highest demand, people who have choice. And those people can choose where they want to go. And I think over time, what we'll see is that those companies that attract those people who want choice are the best companies to work for.
Yeah, I think that's great because it is an employee market right now, and it's really significantly changed the way that people approach job hunting for the time being because the world is their oyster. And if you are somebody with choice, you're employable, you have the right skills, it really makes a big difference in how you're going to approach things.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, something that gets really, that sometimes hiring managers really get taken aback by is the question, like, why should I come to work here? which is, you know, you shouldn't say that in a job situation, in a recruiting situation. However, when you hear that question, you know, do not be offended. Do not be offended. It is definitely an indelicate question, but again, it's uninformed and it's not meant to be entitled. It's meant to say, I'm trying to create a career here. Explain to me, I'm going to come and give my 100%. And, you know, what will that do for me over time? It's not a terrible question to ask.
Yeah, I think it's something that it's all in how you frame the question. If you are entitled about it, like anything, it's not going to go well if you're sitting with your legs back on the table, arms crossed. Why should I work here? Versus, hey, tell me a little bit about what you like about working here and what the highlights have been about your career here. I think it's a completely different context.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and what you can imagine, like, what can you imagine? Can you tell me about some of the people who used to work here? Or what have they gone on to do, you know? You probably know. You should share it.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant.
There's almost no job that's an ending point, right? There's almost no job that's an ending point. And if we think, you know, sometimes companies have a hard time with this. Like, we're such a great place. Come, we chose you to work here. Why are you leaving? But if you're an employee looking at, you know, and a person looking at creating a career of companies and jobs and positions and different tasks and all that kind of stuff, understanding what your potential is and where this might take you is an important thought in this, right? And if you're a company, understanding that, you know, these employees do not expect to be with you forever and a day. They expect to be with you while they're useful. They know that they want to be a step ahead of us as employers, because, you know, they know that all companies don't always have control of, you know, company gets sold, company gets bought, they get spun off, downturn happens, blah, blah, blah. You know, if nothing else, the Great Recession showed employees that they have to take care of their own careers. And we as employers need to absolutely adjust to the fact that it is a seller's market from a talent perspective, not a buyer's one, no matter what the economy is.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a whole new horizon out there. It's the wild, wild west. And I think you've done a great job, though, of sharing with us so many wonderful tips that I'm going to have to look into further on my end as well. So thank you so much for joining us, Lee. Tell me, or our listeners, rather, where can people find your book? Where can they find information about you and your company?
Sure. The best place to go is my website, www.leecarraher.com. You can also follow me on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram at those same things.
Awesome. Perfect. And the book, is it available widely or on Amazon, The Boomerang Principle?
Yes. You'll find it in independent and big bookstores near you and on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Indie Bookland.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Lee. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And tune in next week. We were very excited. I believe we're having Dr. White on the show next week. And if you ever miss any portion of the show, you can always find it immediately following the show in the archive section of LA Talk Radio's website. Or you can also go to iTunes and download it for free on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job. We always invite you to leave feedback, comments, rate us, anything you have to share. We're open to hearing it. And thank you, as always, for tuning in. Have a great week, everyone.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.